Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, what do you guys want to talk about today? Well, give us a call. We've got John Jackson, the Joker from X, in the house with us at PVT Joker US, at Private Joker US on X. He's a retired federal law enforcement officer with over 100,000 followers on X and, of course, lives here in Montana. So it's always fun to have him on the show. I want to get more of his thoughts on a potential peace deal that President Trump is pushing between Russia and Ukraine. First, though, I saw that retired Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb out of Helena. You guys might know him. He's got the Montana Sentinel, which has been doing some great reporting as well. In fact, he and I both were speakers along with Congressman Ryan Zinke at the Lake County Lincoln Reagan dinner earlier this fall as well. But this is what he told Trace Gallagher on Fox News last night about the peace deal and the meeting that just took place, I think, yesterday.
5 hours, still really no great ground movement, Colonel Gobb. What do you think about this? Is this thing getting closer, or are we spinning our wheels?
Seems like it's getting closer. I'm not surprised after 5 hours that you don't have resolution yet, because frankly, this is really one of those rare times that we're bypassing our European allies and NATO in general and going directly to Putin and negotiating with him. So we're talking with him, we're talking with Zelensky, because in this case, I would argue that Putin is somewhat right in the fact that Europe seems to be, you know, trying to continue this war and push for it to last longer for their own reasons. Now, what'll be very interesting is if Trump can actually get an agreement out of Putin that resolves this conflict, regardless of where the European nations are standing.
Yeah, John, it's kind of similar to basically your take on this whole deal as well. There are some in Europe that just want to keep the bloodshed going.
All of them do. And we watched this the whole time during the Biden regime. And I fully believe that if Kamala Harris would have been elected, they were ready as a group between the communists here in the United States and the communists in the EU. They were going to find a way to trip the trigger on World War III. And we were going to be in some kind of world war against nuclear Russia. Because for no other reason than to completely take over their countries. Because what did they love about COVID was the whole emergency thing. Well, what's a bigger emergency than war, right? It's all one big strategy that they have already mapped out. And now they see Trump throwing a big old wrench in it, and they're not happy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And there's some that are just profiting off of all of this that we've seen repeatedly here as well. All right, quick break here on Montana Talks. Phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970. Got a message from Bruce in Ennis regarding this proposed rare earth mine in the Bitterroot Valley. If you've seen this, this has been big in the news. In fact, both of our senators and Congressman Ryan Zinke have now weighed in, as well as the Ravalli County commissioners. So we'll get to that story coming up here right after this, and we'll get John Jackson's take on that and more as well.
Big topics, big ideas. Big Sky, Montana Talks.
All right, so I mentioned we got a message on the Montana Talks app from Bruce in Ennis. And actually, let me just share that here with our listeners across the state so you can hear what Bruce said here. Bruce says this: Hamilton yesterday, 500 hippies showed up to put down a mining project in the Bitterroot. And actually, I think it's actually broader than that. As I mentioned on the show yesterday when I brought this story up, I think there's actually a broader concern regarding fast-tracking that proposed mine. Now, Libby, contrast that with Libby. Libby, I think there is overwhelming local support to get the mines up and running near Libby, right? And people have been talking about and hearing about those potential mining operations for years, decades, frankly. And so when proposed mining projects near Libby made the Fast 41 list of projects, as it is referred to here, which is an expedited permitting process for these mines. I think everybody agrees. I think most of the folks in Libya agree. You'll still get the radical environmentalists, of course, that are going to come out lock, stop, barrel against it. But the Sheep Creek mine, I think that's a different story. I think there is a lot more work that needs to be done there in terms of, you know, the company talking to local folks, because I think clearly you had a lot of folks that showed up. Over 500 people showed up raising their concerns with the Sheep Creek mine in the Bitterroot Valley, getting on that Fast 41 expedited approval list when it comes to this federal permitting process. So anyway, I think that's what's going on there. And we do now have reactions from Senator Tim Sheehy and Congressman Ryan Zinke, who have put out statements, and also I saw a post on X from Senator Steve Daines. But John, kind of the big picture here really is what Trump is trying to do is make our nation less dependent on China for these rare earth materials that are so critical to our national security. But he's also trying to rebuild our industrial base, which includes mining and these high-wage job opportunities. And so while there's obviously, I think, opposition right now to this Sheep Creek mine in the Bitterroot Valley, hey, let's double down on making Libby happen for the people of Libby.
Yeah, no one understands the government bureaucracy and permitting process better than Donald Trump. You know, he was a builder his whole life, construction guy, and has built projects all over the world. And he understands how particularly the federal government will stand in your way and throw blockade after blockade at you for years, basically stopping a project for anybody that's not a gazillionaire. So that one, I remember that was one of his first pledges, is that we're going to take off all the red tape. But true enough, like you're saying, if you do have legitimate local concerns here and not just, you know, a band of, you know, paid mob left-wing hippies, then that is something that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah. So after basically you had this public meeting, you know, over 500 people showed up. And look, the Hamilton area, Ravalli County, very, very conservative county by and large, and county commissioners there, they actually ended up after, you know, hearing from the public, they actually wrote a letter to the governor. There was a story in the Lee newspapers about this. We've got a story on our Montana Talks website that Dennis Bragg is reporting on as well. But basically, the Ravalli County commissioners have now written a letter basically calling on the delegation to oppose getting the Sheep Creek mine on this Fast 41 list of projects. So they want that mine removed from the Fast 41 list. Senator Tim Sheehy said this: "I strongly support unleashing Montana's resource economy and mining industry. I also believe local voices must be heard loudest when considering public lands policy. Regarding the Sheep Creek mine, local Montanans have made their opposition clear. Therefore, I oppose efforts to approve the proposed Sheep Creek mine and encourage the Permitting Council to remove it from their fast-track list." Congressman Ryan Zinke saying, quote, "Montana knows better than anyone there is a right and wrong way to mine. Fast-tracking a mine with overwhelming public opposition and bypassing the mechanisms that allow for transparency and accountability is the wrong way to do it. Ravalli County officials and residents have been clear in their concerns and opposition to this project." So anyway, he's also saying he urges the council to remove Sheep Creek from the Fast 41 process. You know, John, I look at like what the, you know, the proposed copper mine, you know, in White Sulphur Springs has done over the years. I think they did a great job getting the word out to the public, talking with local folks, answering any questions people have. And so I think it's the fast tracking of this one with the absence of that type of information, which has people so concerned.
Well, yeah, don't you find it amazing, too, how immediately responsive your politicians are the ones who are up for re-election next year. Isn't that amazing?
Well, she's not up for re-election next year, and you know, he was one of the first to come out and you know, and listen to the folks on this one, and I would just add that, look, I truly believe, like, the folks in White Sulphur Springs, when proposing that mine and that project, they did a great job in getting the message out to the people, coming on shows like this, answering people's questions, taking their phone calls. And so I think if you want to get a mine up and running, that's what you got to do. You got to get out there and talk to the people more. And I think a rep from this company was at that public meeting the other day. But again, this is still the first that a lot of folks are hearing about this. All right, back right after the break. Stand by.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Man, John Jackson and I were chatting during the break about other stuff in the news, because I was like, hey, what did you want to talk about after this? And it's like, man, so much to talk about. We got to get to this story, though. Apparently, this is just now breaking. President Trump has issued another pardon. But, John, you were telling me this one is for a Democrat. A Democrat member of Congress has now just been pardoned by President Trump.
Yes, for Henry Cuellar, a congressman out of Texas, along with his wife, who under the Biden regime got nailed on in 2024 for federal charges related to bribery and a money laundering scheme involving payments to Azerbaijan and some oil company there. But you and I both know, like we were talking about at the break, and apparently President Trump knows, that this was yet another crooked Joe Biden scam against a political opponent. Because what did this guy do, Cuellar? He came out vocally against the illegal alien invasion that Joe Biden was doing. So what did they do? They put Merrick Garland on him, just like they did to Eric Adams, up there in New York City.
Oh, yeah, the moment you told me that news, President Trump is pardoning a Democrat Congressman Henry Cuellar. That's exactly what was my response. It's like, I remember Cuellar because in the midst of the invasion of all these illegal aliens flooding into this country, because remember if white guys like if a couple of honkies like you and me, John, were complaining about the illegal aliens invading this country, they'd be like, oh, you guys are racist. But when a Democrat Hispanic congressman named Henry Cuellar also complains about the illegal aliens invading the country and calls out the Biden administration, we were talking about it on this show. I remember playing audio sound bites from Henry Cuellar. So, yeah, very obvious what happened. Just like Joe Biden abused his power to go after Trump, his political opponent, he wouldn't just go after his Republican political opponents. They would go after their Democrat political opponents as well. And Cuellar, spotlighting the border, he gets investigated by the Biden regime. New York City Mayor Eric Adams, exactly, another case in point. Democrat, you know, black Democrat mayor of New York City, but once the illegal aliens started flooding into New York City, remember, either he was on his way to the White House to meet with Biden, or he was on his way back from the White House, and that's when the news and the indictment came down, right?
Yeah, and I tell you, this spotlights, and it rolls right into everything we've been screaming about for a year, is that President Trump, along with the Bondi DOJ, could have taken down the entire Democrat infrastructure through going after these NGOs, because for the last 10 years or more, it has just been absolutely common practice for these Democrats out here to do anything they want using fraud with government money. And all you have to do is tickle one of them, and the crimes are right there. Look, you got Cuellar, you got Eric Adams, you got Eric Swalwell, you got Letitia James, you got Adam Schiff, you got James Comey. I mean, all you have to do is take one look at them, and you could do the whole bunch of them.
I just heard a really funny soundbite where somebody mentioned Swalwell and Fang Fang. What was that? Was it Joe Concha or was it Ted Cruz? I can't remember. But anyway, I'll see. Maybe I can track that one down during the next break or something like that. Special election. Special election results, Tennessee yesterday. This was a congressional election. Congressman Mark Green resigned from Congress, and so the Democrats were pouring a whole bunch of money into Tennessee to try to get this Afton Bain elected to Congress. She is the woman who was running to represent Congress in Nashville, and she was on camera talking about how she hates Nashville and she hates country music. Did you see the Guy Benson post yet, John?
Yeah, I actually did this morning. And that was kind of why I brought it up to you during the break. If that's the scary thing about this, Aaron. This lady, a lot of people that, you know, don't follow politics like we do, you don't even know who this lady is. But, I mean, it took them a hot second to come up with every comment she's made out there in her public life. And this lady is not only a loon, but she was bashing the very city that she wanted to represent, saying she hated the place. She hated everything about it. She hated country music in Nashville. And you see still an overwhelming amount of voters came out and voted for this lady. And this lady's not your just garden variety Democrat. She is a loon. I mean, she's probably the kind of person that is on some kind of meds and is laying down on a shrink couch once a week. I mean, this lady is truly a nutbag.
Yeah, and the Guy Benson post is great. I reposted it, about 4 hours ago here. Guy Benson, Democrat candidate. I hate Nashville. Nashville. Nashville is basically the county where Nashville is the only county in that congressional district that went blue. Everywhere else went red. So she hates Nashville. And Nashville is the only that's basically the only county that voted for her. But it's also kind of symbolic, isn't it? Because so many of these candidates that support critical race theory and they bash America and they talk about how bad America is. And yet, how many Democrats end up voting for them, even though they talk about how awful they think America is?
Oh, man, this lady, every single one of her different public statements and things she's done on these podcasts and these streaming things, every time you look in her face, she is the absolute face of the COVID-era Karen that would have been screaming at you to get your jab and wear your mask and stand 6 feet away from me, you science denier! You know?
Free Palestine on the way out, too. You got to throw that one in there now because, you know, the very same Islamo-fascists that were lecturing you about wearing your bullock burqa face mask, as I called it back then, are now the same ones with all this other nonsense. But I think, though, in fact, I caught up with Senator Steve Daines earlier this morning and got his take. He still, and I agree with him, I still think it's a very big win, even though it's a red district. Look, this wasn't even a midterm election. This was a special election. And so for the Republicans to win by 9 points in a special election, and it's different in places like Tennessee, you know, they have multiple members of Congress. We used to only have one. Now we only have two. So, you know, people are it's pretty easy to know which congressional district you're in. And so if there's a special election, it would be a big deal here in Montana. In places like back east, I mean, they have so many members of Congress. Is a special election. I mean, if you think people don't show up for a midterm election, they really don't show up for a special election. So despite all the attention and the money that the left was pouring in to Tennessee, they still lost by 9 points.
You know, Clay Travis, the radio announcer and radio guy, he was taking a special interest in that. That's his hometown where he lives. And I saw him all over Fox. He did a deep dive into this lady. And I'd never seen him really do this before. He was going out of his way to get as many appearances across media as he could to campaign, not so much for the Republican, but against this lunatic.
I just started listening to Clay Travis's book. So Tim and Savage called in one day. He's out there on the Mondakistan border, the border of Montana and North Dakota, which is home to all of the smart Scandinavians who left Minnesota a long time ago, by the way, given the mess that we see in Minnesota right now. But, yeah, he was telling me, because you know, I was talking about this Eric Trump book that I was listening to, which is a great book, by the way. And then the book he recommended, it's called Balls by Clay Travis. Have you heard about this book yet, John? It sounds like it's right up your alley.
I'm not gonna even tiptoe into that topic there. I'm guessing he's talking about sports.
He's a sports guy.
Yeah, he's a sports guy.
So Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. So Buck, they, actually on several radio stations, their show comes on right after we wrap up here at 10 a.m. So, yeah, Buck is like he was the former CIA analyst, political commentator guy, and then Clay was the sports guy who then got into politics because, you know, ESPN and politics overtook sports. And anyway, it's pretty interesting because he talks about how woke politics and identity politics, how it destroys everything that it takes over. Nike, their stock just got hammered after all the Colin Kaepernick stuff. And he just talked about, and then of course gets into the Bud Light thing. But I didn't even realize this. Clay Travis actually voted for freaking John Kerry back in the day. I mean, and now he's all in on Trump and the conservative agenda. But that's what they did when they injected the woke politics into everything, sports especially. That they took these guys who they just like to watch sports. They could care less about talking politics or issues. And they forced them into paying attention about politics and issues because they saw how destructive it was for sports.
Yeah, you see that divide, too. You see that there's the dead-enders. There's the dead-ender communists, Democrats, who no matter what, no matter how bad it gets, they would still deny it all and still pull the lever for Democrats. But then you see these other people that once they come face-to-face, they have personal involvement, personal interaction with these policies for any length of time, you see them. It turns them because they're like, no, this does not work. Not only does this not work, it destroys. We can't have this.
Hey, did you see, I think you mentioned the FBI earlier, and I always feel like whenever I have you on the show, like I'm watching a cop movie, you know, because you're always like, oh, no. You know, F that guy. Oh, well, our agency's better. So I always feel like I'm watching a cop movie because John will always start dishing on the FBI. But did you see that? It reminds me of that letter from the spies who lied about the Hunter Biden laptop. Now there's like over 100 FBI folks who wrote a letter going after FBI Director Kash Patel. And it's starting to seem very reminiscent of the spies who lied in the FBI, you know, good old boy network trying to go after Kash. Anyway, we'll get to that next. Stand by.
This is where Montana talks ag. With Lane Nordlund.
As Tyson Foods plans to close a Nebraska beef plant, sending shockwaves through the state, dubbed the Beef State, the company plans to lay off over 3,200 workers when the plant winds down in mid-January. The Lexington, Nebraska plant handles an estimated 5,000 head a day and is located near several large feedlots. David Jobman is chairman of the Dawson County Cattlemen's Association and said at first he thought it was a joke, but quickly learned it was no laughing matter.
Yeah, as a cattle producer here in Dawson County, I'm just in shock along with everybody else. I'm sure the decision was not made lightly, but yeah, that's going to have a huge impact that's going to ripple across the communities around here. Pretty good area that was bringing fattened cattle to Lexington for slaughter, and now you're going to have to find other markets, and added transportation costs are certainly going to be a factor in decision in that.
Nebraska's cattle on feed numbers remain solid, and local leaders in the community, many of whom raise cattle, would like to see the plant continue running under new ownership, but facing a number of hurdles to do so. And more than 270 leaders from across the dairy industry gathered last week for the 2025 Dairy Sustainability Alliance fall meeting, highlighting how collaboration drives progress. The event highlighted the new 2023 through 24 U.S. Dairy Sustainability Report, tracking progress in well-being, environmental stewardship, and animal and community care. I'm Lane Northland.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I figured out where the Eric Swalwell reference came from. What was the soundbite that I had in hand here where there was an Eric Swalwell reference? It was actually FBI Director Kash Patel was on with Laura Ingraham last night. I'll play that soundbite here in a second. And actually, I'm very interested in hearing what John has to say about this whole deal as well. Because, he's been critical of what he's seeing or not seeing out of the FBI. So I think he'll give us kind of an unvarnished take on this one. First, let's go to Corey in Helena. Yeah, Corey, wanting to weigh in on President Trump's pardon of Congressman Henry Cuellar, the Democrat from Texas. Corey, great to hear from you. What's your thoughts?
Hey, good morning. Well, I was thinking back on John Tester's recent forfeiture, because that's pretty much what he did. He forfeited his election because he refused to come out against the illegal immigration debacle. And, thinking back on what happened to Eric Adams and this Democrat from Texas, it kind of makes sense, I think that, he was afraid of the retribution that he was going to get from Biden and the rest of his party, so he had to stand strong with his best friend, Ali Mayorkas, who even Tom Homan said, Mayorkas was a good guy. What happened to him? They had to toe that line.
That is a very interesting theory. That is a very interesting theory, Corey. So basically you're saying that John Tester, he could have saved his reelection by opposing Joe Biden's illegal alien invasion. And then I think you could throw in the trans insanity along with that. John Tester, I think took a very bad position on, men and women's bathrooms, et cetera. But, not only was he a diehard leftist but who pretended to be a moderate over so many years, but, you're basically suggesting that he was afraid he would be prosecuted if he turned on Joe Biden.
Yeah, even if he wasn't prosecuted, he would be, shunned by the party that he pretty much, devoted his life to. He would have nowhere to go.
Man, that is a fascinating theory. Corey, thanks for calling in. John, what's your take on that? It's an interesting theory because you think about it. Could he have maybe survived his reelection had he done what Corey just suggested there? Probably not, because things were such a train wreck. People might have still seen through the phoniness, and they would have seen it as just election year, flip-flopping once again. But to Corey's theory here, maybe they came to him and said, look, if you turn on Joe Biden on this whole border thing, you know what's going to happen to you. And even if you lose your election, don't worry, you're going to go make a pile of money. He's probably making a ton of money right now. He's got his MSNBC gig. He gets to be on national TV. Interesting theory. John, your take.
Oh, no, that's 100% right. And you saw Obama do that back in 2009, 2010 with Obamacare. He told, 40, 50 House members? He marched them off the plank. And he said, if you go along with Obamacare here, you might lose your reelection. But if you go against me, I guarantee you, you will lose your election, and then you'll be out in the cold. Oh, that's 100%. That's what we've been saying forever, is that Democrats play for keeps here in all things and in every way, and Republicans play for themselves.
Well, and but Trump's playing hardball, even with his fellow Republicans, and that's why Republicans are actually, you know, I think finally uniting and sticking together to get a lot of his agenda done. You know, I think we're seeing a lot more unity in the Republican caucus as a result. All right, I found the Eric Swalwell soundbite that I was looking for. It's so well. First, before I play the soundbite, John, you. You saw the piece, or so I saw Miranda Devine from the New York Post on with Laura Ingraham two nights ago. She's the one who reported on this story of over 100 FBI career folks who are complaining about FBI Director Kash Patel. Now, to me, this looks like another The Spies Who Lied, where you've got the good old boy system in the FBI trying to attack Kash Patel. They never wanted him there in the first place, and they don't like the fact that they're going after Comey, et cetera. So to me, this is another one of these, The Spies Who Lied putting their list together to go after somebody on Team Trump. But the fact that Miranda Devine, this was the point you made during the break, the fact that Miranda Devine broke the story, she is very credible because of the fact that she's basically the one who broke the Biden laptop story for the New York Post.
She's very credible. She's a great reporter. And along with that, no one has been more critical of Kash Patel than me, particularly lately, particularly in the last 3 or 4 months, where you're not seeing the things happening that should already be happening. But the problem with it is you go through the allegations, you read the article, and all of these complaints from these anonymous FBI agents are coming from the left wing. Okay, they are coming from typical complaints of people who didn't like Kash to begin with. And it sure looks to me like a coordinated campaign where they all got together. And I don't doubt that Miranda Devine is telling the truth here, but it's complaints coming from the left wing against Kash Patel, which they're the very people that Kash should have gotten rid of already.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me as well here. This is another Spies Who Lied type of orchestrated campaign. One of the things that they're criticizing for is, well, he's taking the FBI plane to go here and to go there. Well, as he told Laura Ingraham last night, that's because he has to. He's following the law. The FBI director is not allowed to fly commercial. So even if he's, you know, going on a personal trip somewhere, he's not allowed, as I understand it, to fly commercial. So he has to take the plane. So if you don't like that, change the freaking law. But he did talk about how, you know, well, that's another soundbite I could play, but I think he effectively answered that question and showed a huge difference between him and his predecessors with the use of the FBI plane. But this was the part where, I'll just play the clip from Laura's show last night.
They're saying, oh, he refused to get off the plane in Utah after Charlie Kirk's assassination because he wanted a better-fitting FBI raid jacket. Is that true, and does fashion really make the man, Kash?
It's 100% false, as you know. Look, Laura, sadly, I was at 9/11 at Ground Zero in New York City on 9/11 because I was a White House representative honoring those victims and their names being read. You were very familiar with that. Then we made the immediate decision after Charlie got shot in the neck to fly to Utah unexpectedly to lead the manhunt to find the perpetrator in less than 33 hours because the FBI cut video, put it out in a press conference, and these people are worried about what I was wearing, what patches I was wearing. I was honoring my men and women at the FBI. One of my agents handed me a jacket and said, hey, boss, you should probably wear this. We're going to the command center. I said I'd be honored to wear that. And then another one handed me the SWAT team badge of the unit that was protecting the area where Charlie was assassinated. I wore that with pride. These people can talk about my appearances all they want, but look at the results. The FBI, this FBI, my FBI, the one that Dan and I are building here under President Trump, is succeeding in ways that no FBI has ever done so before. So the institution and the anonymous reporters from the swamp DC bureaucracy are the ones we are crushing. And that's how I know we're winning. And if Eric Swalwell wants to come online and talk about what jacket size I wear, I'm happy to send him a women's medium so him and Fang Fang can go out again.
All right, there you go, John.
Well, you know, you got to remember that whole Utah thing with Charlie Kirk. Cash Patel blew them up. He blew up that office out there because of their slow reporting and things that were obvious things that should have been done that weren't done and weren't communicated back to him. I mean, I think that's pretty plain, and they're mad at him about it. And once again, Aaron, make me king of the world. And everybody that was on that tarmac out there that met my plane, you guys are coming in for polygraphs, every single one of you. And if we find out that you talk to the media behind this, you're fired.
Speaking of Eric Swalwell, did you see him get chewed out there was this black woman at a gym in L.A. who was so mad that this man was in the women's locker room, and she made this video. And anyway, that same woman, this black woman, tore into Eric Swalwell. Did you see that video?
I did, and it was about the whole thing about men in women's sports, men in women's locker rooms, bathrooms, the whole bit. And as bad as she tore into him over it, you notice he would never answer the question. He would never say, no, I'm against that. No, it won't happen.
She should run for governor of California instead of him. But, yeah, there he was just continuing to flack for men in women's bathrooms. I mean, it was just like... Good night. Unbelievable. Okay, let's see. I got a quick few minutes left here on this show. If you want to call in, call right now. We should be able to get you on before we run out of time. If not, though, man, John and I, we got a ton of stuff to talk about, especially following President Trump's 9th live multi-hour cabinet meeting that took place yesterday. Some great highlights from that. History.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So many great highlights from the president's cabinet meeting yesterday that we could get to, that we could talk about, but I know we are getting short on time. John, one of these sound bites that I didn't snag, I almost snagged it, but we already had too many other things that we were grabbing. RFK Jr., President Trump's head of Health and Human Services, he spoke for about 9 minutes talking about a big change that they made to support nursing homes in rural America. And Senator Steve Daines actually applauding that announcement. His office sent out a press release yesterday applauding this announcement from the Department of Health and Human Services, repealing a Biden-era rule that disproportionately burdened Montana's rural nursing homes. Senator Daines saying, quote, "Today's announcement from HHS is a massive win for Montana's senior citizens who deserve access to quality long-term care. Biden's one-size-fits-all staffing mandate undermined access to care for patients in our rural communities, and more than a dozen Montana nursing homes closed during his administration. I'm grateful to President Trump and his administration for putting the needs of our senior citizens first and for recognizing the workforce challenges that our rural communities face." John, this was something, you know, he referenced it there. More than a dozen Montana nursing homes closed during the Biden administration. This is something that people so easily forgot, is the destruction that the COVID mandates, the COVID lockdowns, and other big government measures that were still being pushed by Joe Biden, it devastated so many nursing homes here in Montana. And in fact, we had Attorney General Austin Knutson join us on the radio at the time, calling out the Biden administration for what they were doing specifically to rural health care.
Yeah, and that all relates all back to Obamacare. And you said, I don't know if you've seen it, over the last few years, I know this probably contributed to these nursing homes closing, is that now it used to be once you got to a certain age, you know, you bought yourself a long-term care policy, right? Just in case you get up something, you know, get later in life, something happens to you. You've got insurance now that can pay to put you in a nice place. You can't even afford to buy those policies anymore. If they ever even do offer them out here, the premiums are so outrageous that nobody can afford them anymore. And that all goes back to all the regulations surrounding Obamacare.
Well, and apparently you got to put your name on a waiting list, like really early on. Like, okay, you graduate high school, get your name on the wait list for the nursing home. It's danger close for some of us out there. Not, but anyway. There were so many great highlights from the cabinet meeting. You had Pete Hegseth eviscerating the fake news media and these false claims on the narco-terrorist strikes. You had Secretary Kristi Noem calling out the wacko Tim Walz. I forget the word she used for him. Maybe it was weirdo, wacko, who knows. But then what about this one from Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins?
Thing which became very much a part of the national conversation during the Democrat shutdown was SNAP reform, food stamp reform. When all of America saw what so many of us know and have been working on, but when you have so much rampant fraud in a program that 42 million Americans participate in, now a big good piece of news that I hope is written about, since you became president, about 800,000 of those 42 million have moved off of food stamps, which is hopefully the plan with better jobs, higher wages, etc. But still, when we found 186,000 dead people or dead people's Social Security numbers being used, 500,000 people receiving benefits more than twice. We had a couple of people receiving benefits in six states. In February of this year, we asked for all the states for the first time to turn over their data to the federal government to let the USDA partner with them to root out this fraud, to make sure that those who really need food stamps are getting them, but also to ensure that the American taxpayer is protected.
Man, doesn't that make you happy, John, to know that that your taxes are being put? My goodness, we are getting ripped off. We've been getting ripped off in so many ways.
42 million people out here, 12% of the population. And like I said a couple of weeks ago on your show, Aaron, all of these things that we've just talked about here in the last couple of hours on your show, all of this major work that we have to do in this country, none of it's going to get done. Our cabin in the woods is not going to get built until we kill the wolf pack that is surrounding us and nipping at our heels at every minute. None of this is going to happen until the wolves get trapped.
I feel like I need to quote The Hangover now. You know, first it was a wolf pack of one, and then we're a wolf pack of two, and now we're a wolf pack of three. Who is this wolf pack that is howling at the gates? Well, actually, it's inside the gates, frankly. I've got my answer, but yeah, give us yours again for those who missed it.
They are, first of all, these corrupt, radical judges. They are the mainstream media, and then they are the Democrat Party themselves.
And, of course, figuratively speaking in terms of, one thing that I also did earlier this morning, the Media Research Center, they've got a great piece talking about the First Amendment. I think people would be amazed at when they find out what Joe Biden's administration did to undermine conservative media, to use taxpayer dollars to be weaponized against conservative media outlets, even embedding spies with inside of organizations using taxpayer dollars. I'll tell you what, go check that out on the Montana Talks podcast, my conversation with the vice president from the Media Research Center. I mean, it's just crazy.
History shows.